From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Georgia dominates Austin Peay on Saturday. Obviously, there was a ton of great coverage there at DogNation.com. I read every word of it. One of my favorite pieces was actually from my buddy Jeff Sintel, who had his sort of freshman report. And Jeff's a perfect person to write this because he's been following these UGA freshmen for years in the recruiting trail. And he did a great job of really kind of cataloging everyone who got into the game for Georgia on Saturday and the specific moments that mattered most for those players once they got into the game. This is going to be, I guess, a weekly staple there to DogNation.com after games. And I think it's a really good thing to have because, listen, I'm sure a lot of you are the same way I was, whether you're watching on TV or there in the stadium. I got my flip chart out. I'm trying to, you know, keep up with everything and just try to sort of notice every time a new player went into the game. And Jeff did a really good job of kind of tracking all that for us there at DogNation.com. So you can, I guess, sort of compare your own notes to his when it comes to that. And obviously, the influx of new talent to Georgia, I think, was one of the big takeaways in the game. After all, there's not a whole lot you can tell about Georgia versus Austin Peay. It is such a mismatched opponent, so much so that the game was even shortened in the fourth quarter. But that sort of wave of talent that Georgia brought into the game, many of it young players, obviously that was a sort of a big deal and one of the big takeaways from the game. When you think about next week on the road in the SEC against South Carolina, the level of competition stepping up in a mighty way, Kirby Smart also referenced those young players this week on Saturday when he spoke to the media saying, those guys have got to get ready now for a tremendous difference from one week to the next in terms of the level of competition that's going to be played here. Here is Kirby Smart with a very blunt message for some of his young players that saw their first UGA action on Saturday.
Thought there were a lot of young guys that had a lot of jitters that needed to get those out. We got to grow up, and we got to grow up fast because the road in front of us is not easy. We're getting ready to play a team I got a lot of respect for and play in a place that is extremely difficult to play in.
Yeah, so Kirby Smart says there, under no uncertain terms, these young players ahead of South Carolina have to grow up really fast. And, you know, obviously I don't know specifically who it is that Kirby Smart's referencing there when he says that, but I have an assumption here. In some cases, that may be some of those guys on defense. Maybe in particular a guy like Tyson Campbell, who made his first start in a Georgia uniform on Saturday. Now, for those of you that either listen or watch Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza every single day, you know that I'm a big believer in Campbell, at least in terms of what I think he could mean for Georgia here in 2018. He's one of those guys that I think could be the difference in a national championship or not if he truly plays the level that I think is available to him here this season. But he will be tested on Saturday. When Kirby Smart says young players grow up fast, Campbell's one of the names that comes to mind when I think about that statement from Smart, especially when you think about what South Carolina wants to be offensively this year compared to what the Gamecocks have been in the past under Will Muschamp. You may have followed the story to know that Kurt Roper was offensive coordinator at South Carolina. Most Gamecocks fans dissatisfied with him a season ago. Roper had also been with Muschamp at Florida. Big changes to the South Carolina offense over the course of the offseason. Brian McClendon, the former Georgia assistant, brought in his brand new offensive coordinator there. Dan Warner also becomes the quarterback coach. He'd had some success at Ole Miss. And all of a sudden now you see a South Carolina offense that was talked about a lot during the spring and put on display a bit on Saturday against Coastal Carolina, a team that wants to play much faster, a team that wants to be much more up-tempo. Is that the same thing that we'll see young defensive players for Georgia will see on Saturday against the Gamecocks? Well, Muschamp talked a little bit about that after his team's game against the Chanticleers.
What you're going to see is times when we're going really fast and there's going to be some times that we're taking a look and see what we're getting. And so I think it's going to be a game-by-game operation from what, you know, Brian and I have talked about as far as administering the offense. And there's times that we feel like we're being a very effective going fast with it. We will.
Yeah, so that's obviously something to pay attention to there. A little bit of a maybe a sort of a reversal from some of Muschamp's comments during the spring when he talked a lot more about being up-tempo. But certainly it would seem like there's still the chance they want to put that pressure on, in some cases, a young Georgia defense, in other cases, an inexperienced Georgia defense in terms of how fast the offense plays behind quarterback Jake Bentley. The thing you saw from South Carolina on Saturday, and this is something to think about when you get ready for Georgia this weekend, and I realize it's a level of competition that matters here, but remember, this is a South Carolina team that did not have great success running the ball a year ago. In the Georgia game in particular, Gamecocks could really get nothing on the ground whatsoever. You did see a little better performance from that on Saturday in terms of big numbers from Rico Dattle, more holes for offensive linemen opened up for running backs to run through. So if the secondary is being challenged by Jake Bentley on Saturday, There's also the potential threat that the overall running game for South Carolina is just a little bit better shaped this year than it was a year ago, and Muschamp alluded to that as well on Saturday night.
We were getting a nice surge up front, which we should have. So at the end of the day, the competition picks up next week. We need to continue to improve.
Yeah, the competition does pick up, but obviously when you think about South Carolina, what George's going to have to stop, trying to run the ball a little more effectively than it did a year ago is obviously a big way that South Carolina could potentially keep this game close against UGA, which sort of brings things back to the Georgia defense from Saturday and what we saw. I mentioned Tyson Campbell. I mentioned him making his first start, and depending on what South Carolina tries to do offensively is going to determine how much help Georgia can give a guy like Campbell. You know, Kirby Smart said before the first game of the season last week that one of the things that he thinks about his cornerback spots is that's really one of the easiest positions to play in the Georgia defense right now because, to use Kirby Smart's phrase, they play so much man coverage there. But can you do that on Saturday given the fact that South Carolina has two really good receivers, Debo Samuel and Brian Edwards, two very good pass-catching targets there for the Gamecocks? Can you do that? Well, I guess that largely depends on how well Georgia's stopping the run. When South Carolina is not throwing the football there, that'll go a long way towards determining that. But it is a big moment for a guy like Campbell, who you did see on the field for the first time on Saturday, now for the first time on the field against an SEC opponent this weekend. Kirby Smart talked a little bit about, what it was that he saw from Campbell on Saturday against Austin Peay, and these are crucial words when you think about the role that he could also play against South Carolina. Here's more from Kirby.
Hard to say without watching the tape. I saw the one throw over him on the sideline. He made a nice play, but he had some nerves. He missed some checks that we make him check. He missed some things, but he was nervous. When it's your first game in that stadium, it's nerve-wracking. I think he'll gain some confidence, and that's what we wanted him to do today.
Yeah, when you hear Kirby Smart saying that, maybe it makes you think that maybe he was one of the guys that Smart was referencing a little earlier when he said young players got to go up fast. Obviously, nerves are to be expected. In a big 92,000-seat stadium like, Samford against Austin Peay on Saturday, maybe even more, with the CBS televised contest against South Carolina on Saturday. But a big performance from the freshman cornerback opposite DeAndre Baker, I think, is a big part of this. Now, it's worth pointing out here that, Tyson Campbell wouldn't even be out there had he not earned that during practice, and he battled two pretty impressive guys to get to that point. We talked a lot about Mark Webb. We talked a lot about Eric Stokes, who had gotten some praise here so far this summer. But ultimately, it was Campbell who beat both those guys out for the starting job, and Kirby Smart explained why it was that Campbell ultimately got the nod.
I think just a gut instinct that he's the next best guy. I mean, he's athletic, fast, strong, got good ball skills. I mean, at some point, you got to make a decision on who you want to grow and go play with. And, Stokes came in and played a lot of snaps for Bake, and I thought Stokes played well, but we just felt like Tyson was the best guy to go with at this point.
So ultimately, here's why this matters. When you think about what South Carolina is going to present offensively on Saturday, you think about a scenario where this is a team that I think is going to be a lot more confident offensively here in 2018 than it was a year ago. Now, the expectation I have is Georgia still wins this game. Georgia still covers the 10-point number, which Vegas sort of put out as the opening line here. I think this is going to be a comfortable Georgia win, but it doesn't mean that South Carolina can't put some pressure on Tyson Campbell and the Georgia defense in particular here. I want to take you back to a moment for the Gamecocks against Coastal Carolina on Saturday. Late first half, a time when maybe in years past under Muschamp in South Carolina, maybe they play conservative, maybe they take the knee, get to the half, and look to do some damage in the second half. But in this particular case, South Carolina put its foot on the gas, scores a touchdown. Why did they do that? Well, apparently, Muschamp's got a lot more confidence in Jake Bentley as quarterback now than he did a season ago. And apparently, they're going to use Bentley in such a way that those young guys playing in the Georgia defense better be ready. Here is more of Will Muschamp on his quarterback.
Well, there was never any question in the first half what we're going to do because of the experience of our quarterback being at home, experience of our skilled people outside in our offensive line. Put the ball in the guy's hands and let him play. And that's all, to me, is all a situational deal before the half, or how aggressive you want to be. We're going to be aggressive with Jake.
So listen, here's the bottom line for me in this entire discussion. I think this is a really fun chess match on Saturday between two really good friends. You know that Smart and Muschamp have a great relationship with each other, and I imagine that what we'll be talking a lot about this week has sort of been kind of foreshadowed what we just discussed there. Georgia's got some guys that's breaking in brand new to its defense, whether it be the secondary or the guys that are in sort of expanded roles replacing Roquan Smith or, really a lot of other things you could point to here as well. Gamecocks have not been great on offense under Will Muschamp. With Brian McClendon as the new OC and Dan Werner as the quarterback's coach, they hope that changes here this season. And that South Carolina offense trying to put pressure on the Georgia defense, especially a lot of guys playing on the road in the SEC for the first time, could be one of the pivotal storylines for the game here this upcoming Saturday. Ultimately, I think that Georgia matches that challenge. I think they step up and get it done here on the road, but there will be a lot of talk about that side of the ball as we head towards Saturday at 3:30. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks for being with us. Whether you watch us live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube page, or the Dog Nation Twitter feed, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev. No radio for us today. We'll be back on the radio there tomorrow. The folks there in Athens taking a bit of a holiday, so we'll let them do that. And we will be back on the radio again at noon on Tuesday. Also, on podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, the world-famous DogNation.com, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player. We're just really glad you found Dog Nation Daily here today, and glad to hear from so many on Twitter over the weekend who let me know that you're enjoying Marco's Pizza as a way of watching the game on Saturday, which I think is a great way to do it. Stay in the air conditioning. The folks in Athens were sweating big time on Saturday. Stay there in the air conditioning and take advantage of a great deal from Marco's. Two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's every store, every day, the Italian way. You go to Marco's.com, take advantage of the offer yourself. Say hello, Primo, with authentic Italian quality pizza. Giammarco family recipe on the sauce. Three cheeses blended together on the authentic Italian crust. Just great stuff there at Marco's Pizza. Glad to hear so many of you enjoyed that here over the course of the weekend. Let me also do a few things about the game on Saturday here against Austin Peay before we bring on Chip Towers to our program. We call this Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. Around the Doghouse today is brought to you by our friends at Pella Windows. Let me deal with the good and the bad in terms of what we saw from Georgia a bit on Saturday. Great news in one respect, maybe a little concerning news in another. First of all, Demetrius Robertson, a guy that many of you know, I was really excited to see make his debut for Georgia on Saturday. And how about that? First touch in a Georgia uniform, takes the handoff and sprints for a touchdown. And obviously Kirby Smart, who's never completely satisfied with anything, gave a pretty candid assessment of Robertson's score here in terms of what we got to see and maybe what Smart wants to see a little more of from Robertson. This is a really sort of Kirby Smart-esque line of, if you've ever heard one, and it's the perfect way to describe what Robertson got done on Saturday.
I was happy for him. You know, I thought his first touch to be a touchdown was incredible. It's awesome for a kid that's been all over the country, and he'll tell you he should have came here the first time. So he's here now, and that was his first touch. So I'm happy for him, but he's not in condition that he should be in, and he'll tell you that. And he ran out of gas on that run. So in the SEC, that might not have been a touchdown. So we want to encourage him to keep getting in shape so that he can turn that into a touchdown when we play an SEC opponent.
You'll remember that before Robertson transferred to Georgia, he missed almost all of 2017. So if he's not fully in game shape yet, that's, I think, what Kirby Smart's referencing there. But I believe that this Saturday against South Carolina for the rest of the season, Demetrius Robertson in a lot of different roles offensively for Georgia is going to be a big part of the story there and a big part of the picture. And, yeah, maybe he does need to sort of work on that conditioning just a little bit. But ultimately, I think that Robertson's going to do big things for Georgia here this season. And there was a real wow factor when Robertson took that ball on Saturday, because while he may have run out of gas at the end, Kirby Smart would know that better than me, when he really hit the afterburner there in sort of the middle of that run, I mean, he really looked like a blaze. And for what it's worth, Mecole Hardman on his touchdown looked very much the same way. So that's part of the good from Saturday. One of the, I guess, not-so-great storylines, and if you left the stadium early because it was so hot, or if you tuned the TV out because George was up so big, you may have missed this, but James Cook, who had kind of flashed some brilliance at times on Saturday on punt coverage there in the fourth quarter, goes in, puts his head down, and really levels a punt returner who had supposedly called for a fair catch there. Ends up being ruled a targeting call. Cook was suspended for the rest of the game against Austin Peay. That doesn't matter, but by rule, he's also suspended now for the first half against South Carolina as well, and that does, I believe, matter. We'll hear more from Chip Towers on this in a moment, but here is how Kirby Smart saw that penalty on Cook from his vantage point.
Yeah, just the poor decision. I mean, the kid's playing tough, a lot of effort. We were subbing out. You know, Miko was in that spot. We took Miko out late in the game. We were giving James one of his first punt reps. He didn't see the fair catch, so it wasn't like he was intent to harm. He just I never saw the fair catch myself either. It was really early, so I didn't think he fair caught it. But whether he fair catches that ball or not, we teach you to break down and never lead with the head. And, you know, he doesn't tackle every day for a living. We've put him in tackling drills because we have to put those guys in tackling drills on special teams. But just not a good decision, kind of a rookie mistake, and it's really unfortunate because He's a really good player, and he'll be missed first half of next week.
If you're watching our video feed right now, great photos there of James Cook and the hit that he put on the Austin Peay punt returner there, which gives you a chance to see what really went on there. Now, if you're Kirby Smart saying what you said there, my guess is that once he saw the replay of the Cook hit, he realized the penalty obviously going to have to be called. It was clear contact with the head. I'm not mad at Cook for it. I agree with Kirby Smart that it's better to play aggressive than not, but officials in that case had really no option other than to call the penalty on James Cook there on that one, which is a little bit of a shame because I think that Cook's going to be a big part of Georgia's plans against South Carolina and really for the entirety of the season. I think Saturday was an example of that, but from a strategic standpoint, Georgia will have to coach around not having Cook for the first half. That's Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. It's brought to you here on Mondays by our friends at Pella Windows. And Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help you equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. They are a family-owned and operated branch right here in Georgia, which means you get the local service backed by a national company. And right now, through September 13th, you can get 40% off qualifying installations with 0% APR for 48 months. You know that Pella offers the best lifetime warranty, top-of-the-line equipment, unparalleled expertise, so you can schedule your free home in-home consultation today by simply going to PellaSoutheast.us. That's PellaSoutheast.us, or give them a call at 404-445-2979. That number, once again, 404-445-2979. It's great to have Pella Window and Door as a part of our Around the Doghouse here each and every Monday on Dog Nation Daily. Also great to have you with us as well. I know you're looking forward to hearing Chip Towers' thoughts on the game. Let's check in with him right now here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marcos Pizza.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Well, Chip Towers, I hope you survived the heat on Saturday. It was a hot one indeed, and it was a little bit, I guess, different affair than we've typically seen from Georgia in these kind of games. I briefly mentioned this, I think, before you joined us here. I don't know that I've ever seen a game shortened, the two coaches agreeing to do this, as if this was a rec league-type deal. I mean, how weird was that for you to see Georgia and Austin Peay play just a 10-minute fourth quarter there on Saturday?
Yeah, I've never seen it in all my years. And you know, I've covered a lot of games, and I've covered some blowouts. You know, Georgia's had some more lopsided outcomes than they did in that one against Austin Peay. But, you know, apparently it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment decision. Kirby Smart talking about it after the game that, I can't remember the kid. I believe it was an Austin Peay lineman that was down on the field injured, and you know, both coaches went out there on the field, and it was during, you know, kind of an impromptu discussion while they were out there attending to that guy. Now, fortunately, I understand Austin Peay didn't suffer any really serious injuries out of that game, no, you know, torn knees or anything like that, but he was like, hey, can we cut this thing a little short? And, you know, the referees are right there and said they can. Apparently, that's in the rules. I haven't explored it further. But, you know, I couldn't complain, but I'm sure anybody like you or anybody else who was there sitting in that stadium didn't mind seeing that one being cut a little bit short. I mean, it's always hot. Early September games, it was particularly stifling for whatever reason on that particular day. And kind of once, you know, Georgia popped out, I guess it was maybe 31-0 in the second quarter or so, you know, you saw probably half of that stadium empty as it was. And, yeah, so it was just miserable from that standpoint, but Georgia did what they were supposed to do, and man, they played a lot of players. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen them play so many players. I know they didn't last year, and there's not a ton we can draw from it other than kind of knowing who's who and what's what in terms of what the personnel groupings and such are going to look like. But other than that, not a ton you can carry out of that into the South Carolina game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's Chip Towers here on Dog Nation Daily. And, Chip, one of the things I was discussing before you joined us was the targeting call there on James Cook in the fourth quarter. And this is one of those weird things, as you know, where, you know, you're sitting there getting ready to, you know, kind of write your sort of synopsis of what happened. A lot of fans have either left the stadium or sort of tuned out from TV. We're getting ready for our Northside Hospital postgame show. The game, for the most part, has been put on ice. And then I could say that arguably one of the bigger storylines of the game then happens in the sort of garbage time of the fourth quarter with the targeting call on James Cook, now suspended for the first half against South Carolina. There are, of course, two ways of looking at this. On the one hand, Cook's not Georgia's starter at running back, but I think he was definitely going to play in the first half. We saw Georgia give carries to four different running backs in first halves of games a year ago. From a strategic standpoint, how big of a deal is it for Georgia to only have Cook for the second half against the Gamecocks next week?
Well, it's significant. I don't think it's overly significant. Just like you said, I mean, obviously he's not a guy who's going to carry the ball probably as many times as either Elijah or DeAndre Swift, and especially in the scenario of you know, being straight behind Jake Fromm in the shotgun. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to downplay too much either, because, I mean, if you go back and look at Saturday's stats, you know, James Cook got second most touches out of the running back. So he had six runs for 66 yards, 11 yards a touch. That's not insignificant in and of itself. And I had a lot of people on social media, and, you know, just some people I talked to personally, just ran into after we said, you know, says, what the heck is he doing in the game at that point? Why are you doing that? And, you know, this is what you're going to see from Georgia under Kirby Smart. You know, number one, he's the backup gunner, and he was filling in for Mecole Hardman. So he's going in there, you know, getting some reps, because they may need him to do that in the game. And so that's the reason he was out there. But clearly, you know, he hadn't done that a lot, as Kirby did. They've worked on it, but, you know, tackling's not what he does, right? And
yeah.
So that was, you know, the whole thing was kind of botched. And, you know, in retrospect, it was a bad idea. But, you know, to answer your question directly, yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily a deal breaker. I don't think Georgia was probably 100% what they had, knew what they had going on with James Cook before the Austin Peay game. I mean, you had an idea, but I don't imagine he was a big part of the plan for South Carolina. And let's be clear about this. A lot of the South Carolina plan is done. It's in, you know, the hopper and ready to go. This is not going to be a cram week for Georgia. They've been anticipating this game for a long time, and I imagine that Jim Chaney has a pretty strong play script already going, which I definitely had some James Cook in it, but a little less now.
Let me just a quick follow-up on that, because one of the things I said on our Northside Hospital postgame show is that even if Cook's not getting the ball on a particular play in the first half against South Carolina, if I'm Georgia, I love the fear I could strike in the Gamecocks defense by thinking that speedy running back might get it. It's almost the misdirection that Cook provides to make defenses stay back on their heels that's just as valuable as Cook not having the football, or actually having the football in some respects.
Yeah, that's true, absolutely. But, you know, and listen, nobody is more fired up about James Cook than Mike Griffith, you know. And then and then I'm probably number two on that. But let's not get too swept up in this, because, you know, I mean, Georgia has an embarrassment of riches that they can run out of that slot and out of the backfield, you know, between Mecole Hardman and Demetrius Robertson and Akil Crumpton. And, you know, they don't really have a running back per se just like him. But, you know, they can switch those positions around just so, you know, the same way you and I change shirts. And that's not a problem.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. We'll talk a lot about the Georgia Bulldogs here coming up. Let me take a brief moment, though, to mention that one of the things I've heard from so many Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers as of late is not just how excited they are about the upcoming season for the Georgia Bulldogs, but how excited they are about this stretch run going on for the Atlanta Braves right now. And I feel the same way. We talk about this in the comment section a lot. Another big win for the Braves yesterday. Another home run to start the game by Ronald Acuna Jr., who is sort of the young phenom for the Braves, much like many of the young phenoms that debuted for Georgia on Saturday. It is a lot of fun to watch right now as the Braves make another push here for the postseason in the month of September. Boston in town for a series starting here today. And then the final home stretch of the season comes up after that. Homestand against the Washington Nationals, the St. Louis Cardinals. Then you got the Philadelphia Phillies coming in. And really, it's those games against the Phillies that could determine the National League East. So here on a Dog Nation Daily, we're obviously paying close attention to the Atlanta Braves as well, as they make another big drive for the postseason here in 2018. And if you want to be a part of that, which you should be, go to Braves.com/tickets. You can absolutely be in on what has been a lot of fun all summer long and will continue into the fall here as the Atlanta Braves are doing some big things. And I have love watching Ronald Acuna Jr. Atlanta Braves baseball, chop on. And Chip, getting back to Georgia here for a moment. We talked about Demetrius Robertson here a bit before you joined us, his touchdown on Saturday. And I know Kirby sort of chided him a bit in his postgame press conference for maybe not being, you know, 100% in shape the way that he will be maybe by the end of the season. But you saw the glimpse against Austin Peay. This guy's going to be a big part of the Georgia offensive attack this season, right?
Yeah, I think he's got to be, you know. And he was in there, you know, a bunch of reps before he finally got the counter sweep, jet sweep, whatever you want to call it, you know, out of the slot position. And Georgia was trying to get him to the ball through the air. And that's what he told me after the game when I was talking to him. I actually got a rare one-on-one with him afterward, and I'll tell you about that in a second. But, you know, Georgia was targeting him and just couldn't get the ball to him. Because Austin Peay, like everybody else, that's the thing. Everybody knows who this kid is. You know, so when 16 runs on the field, you know, there can be a lot of alarm bells going off in defensive coordinator's mind, which is just, look, that's just a part of the excitement of what Georgia can do on offense overall. But this was obviously, this is my first opportunity to speak to him personally, and that was my takeaway on it. And so if I can picture the scene for you in a minute, Demetrius Robertson was back in kind of a back room, a new area they have in the interview set up in post-game, and I had not gotten back there to talk to him, and so he was leaving. And, I told Georgia's sports communications, I said, hey, I really need to talk to Demetrius. So I talked to him and said, he's done, and Demetrius says, can he walk with me? You know, so he asked that, and so I walked along with him, and this is, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just unusual. Yeah, you know, so Demetrius, you know, he reaches down, puts his arm around me, you know, and just, so now we're walking arm in arm, going down out of the interview area. But I mean, he was just, and his remarks and just his demeanor was just so impressive to me. You know, I mean, he understood, he knew who I was, he knew I needed something, you know, and that's what he said. What did you need? You know, puts his arm around, and leans down, and I just said, well, you know, and asked my little bit of questions. I was able to turn around and. You can go on Dog Nation and read the sure. You know, the short little sidebar I did on him. But that's what my takeaway was. We know he's a dynamic player. And, you know, in my person, all it takes is a little kindness toward the media maybe there for me to say, you know, he's a dynamic person as well. But, yeah, Georgia's got a lot of options, and he's going to be one of them. And just figuring out how to get him the ball within all these other people needs touches is a real challenge for Jim Chaney. But with the kind of X factor hanging out there right now on Terry Godwin. Now, I think he'll definitely dress out and make that trip to Columbia based on everything we saw, but he's missed a lot of time. And I think for the time being, at least, Demetrius Robertson really eases that, you know, that burden of possibly not having a Terry Godwin completely injected into a game plan. He certainly helps you in that regard at the very least.
So Georgia opens as a 10-point favorite versus South Carolina, according to some of the folks who cover the Vegas betting markets there. I have sort of complicated feelings on this game, Chip, because on the one hand, I actually think that Georgia's going to cover that number relatively easily. And I know that, you know, Columbia's been a house of horrors for Georgia in the past. I just think this Georgia team is a lot better than this South Carolina team. However, that's not to say that I don't think that South Carolina presents a real issue for the Dogs. Debo Samuel's back and healthy. I think he's an incredibly dynamic player. I think this new-look South Carolina offense, a bit more up-tempo, leaning on Jake Bentley a bit more, trying to run the ball a bit more effectively than it did a year ago. With a lot of young guys playing on defense, I think that the South Carolina offense, led by Brian McClendon, ironically enough, actually might present a real interesting challenge for Georgia, especially wide receivers versus defensive backs, because that may be the only spot on this entire sort of like comparison between the two teams where South Carolina might have something close to an edge.
No, I would absolutely agree with you 100% there. I think they definitely have an edge. Just on Debo Samuel alone, you know, let's be honest. I mean, this is I believe he's the best playmaking wide receiver in the Southeastern Conference, and Georgia really benefited from missing him last year when South Carolina came to Athens, and you and I, Brandon, have followed the Dogs long enough to know that you know Williams-Price Stadium is a house of horrors for Georgia, and not necessarily in the cases that you lose there, and Georgia has obviously lost the last three times they were there before they were there in 2016, but even in years where Georgia had stacked teams going in there. You know, 2002, you know, David Pollack has to rip the ball away around for a 13-7 win. 2004 was one of the best teams Mark Richt put together, even though it didn't win in the East or the SEC. You know, Georgia barely comes out of there alive, 20-16. 2018, you know, ranked number one in America at one point early in the year, you know, 14-7, they barely win. So I don't know that Georgia will cover that line necessarily. I'm in agreement with you, though. I think there's a significant personnel difference on this on these two teams. But listen, you cannot discount what that in environment is. And Brian McClendon too. You touched on there. Look, B-Mac will have a lot to prove in this game because he was, after all, interim head coach at the University of Georgia. He had designs. He wanted to be offensive coordinator at the University of Georgia. I don't know whether he had any opportunity at all to go to work for Kirby Smart, but, you know, obviously that didn't happen. So he's going to be supremely motivated. And, I, you know, look, you're going to try to win every time out anyway. But he's got some parts and pieces to play with over there. And so, yeah, it's just it's an incredibly dangerous game. It depends. I think it's really important, Brandon, for Georgia to get up in this game early, to take South Carolina's best shot and knock it right back in their face. And if you can do that two or three times, get that crowd out of it, then you have an opportunity to handle that 10-point line as it is. But if you keep them in it, the longer they believe, the bigger problem you're going to have on your hands.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting way to describe all that. With that in mind, you know, Tyson Campbell, who, you know, I've been a big proponent of, hoping that he would step up, because I think that, you know, Georgia needs that athleticism in its secondary. He got to start on Saturday, but Chip, as I discussed before you joined us here today, he was also described as having been nervous by Kirby Smart in his post-game press conference on Saturday. And now, whether it's being matched up against Deebo Samuel, who's going to be a first-round pick, or Brian Edwards, who's a very good receiver in his own right, now it's a huge step up in competition. How much do you think those nerves for Campbell increase week one to week two because it's a better opponent, or does it subside a bit now that he's actually been in a college game?
Well, I think he's probably still going to be pretty nervous in this game, and he's not human if he's not, okay? Because, look, here's the reality, guys. I mean, they're going to be coming after Tyson Campbell, all right? I mean, that's just, you know, it's not complicated. But, you know, Brian McClendon, whoever the offensive coordinator is on the other team, they're going to try to get one-on-one matchup with whatever they believe the weakness to be, and it's not DeAndre Baker. They're not going to go that way, you know? So, you know, they're going to be coming after three, and they're going to find out what he's all about. And so we're going to find out what he's all about this week. This will be very, very telling. I mean, I don't think, you know, Austin Peay, that was a problem to them, kind of being a run-oriented option team. You know, they're just not really giving you anything that you can carry, you know, on into the season. Perhaps maybe you can take something out of that playbook into the Tech game at the end of the year. But otherwise, you're not going to see much like that. And, you know, so they're going to be coming after Tyson Campbell. If he responds well in this game, I think Georgia's got a lot to relax about. The good point, Georgia has lots of options, you know, whether it be Mark Webb or Eric Stokes, and, you know, maybe Tyreek McGee comes back in this game. I think I've told you in previous times, I thought that was a little bit more of a significant injury than maybe a lot of people were bringing on. That's a very experienced defensive back, which is what Georgia's missing right now. So Georgia has some options, and I think you can see them do a lot of different things to try to shore that up. But Tyson Campbell's going to get tested this week. And I think it'd be, if you like to watch games and kind of isolate on somebody, watching number three on defense might be a good focus this coming weekend.
All right, Chip, let me finish up with this. Let me say thank you for your great reporting on the Urgel family there, Landry Urgel, and what she's kind of been through. The family, obviously, of the Austin Peay offensive line coach. You really shined a light on their situation, and I think ends up, you know, helping that family raise a lot of money for obviously battling the situation they've battled with there. I just think it's a really cool thing to see, you know, reporting make the impact that it did. I know it's a busy football season. We're all obviously very curious to see if Georgia's going to win a national championship and kind of where it all goes from here. But to take the time that you did to sort of highlight some of that kind of stuff with the Urgel family, I just really appreciated that. I know, you know, they must be appreciative as well. In fact, I know they are, because we saw them on the video board on Saturday, you know, thanking all of Dog Nation for what went on there. But in particular, Chip, you know, I wouldn't have known about this had you not written about it at DogNation.com. I think there are a lot of other people who kind of feel the same way there on that. So that's a kind of a really nice thing, and I really just appreciate you doing that.
Well, I appreciate it, and I really have enjoyed it myself. You know, it's one of those things all of us in life as human beings, you fall in love with different things in different ways. And I sort of fell in love with the story of Landry Urgel. And, it, you know, look, I'm a journalist. I chronicle. I'm a messenger. And so I didn't do anything. It shows the power, though, of Dog Nation, of both the Bulldog Nation and of DogNation.com. You know, we have an incredible reach. And it started instantly enough. You know, I just called up there. Their sports communication guys, a guy named Stefan Nola, you know, and just a stupid question from the out-of-town journalist, hey, you got any interesting stories up there beyond, you know, just who's good and who's not, you know? And he goes, funny you should say that, you know? And it was just, you know, and then a great story was born, and it just really shows the power that's behind, you know, really the University of Georgia right now. I was talking to I guess it was Claude, somebody on Georgia Sports Communications staff, can't remember who it was this weekend. And, you know, when you get something going like Georgia has going right now, it's so powerful, it's like a laser. And you just, wherever you turn and point it, it's going to make a lot of difference. And, you know, Kirby Smart, I had no idea that Kirby Smart and Mary Beth were going to step up at that halftime, you know, presentation and add $5,000. I actually checked this morning, and it's nearly $150,000 that has been raised for that family. And this is a need, a real need, that you know, for them. And it just blows me away because, you know, when this whole thing first initiated, the first gets out, they had $22,000 in a GoFundMe account trying to get 40 so they could pay off some credit cards. Now there's an extended help that Landry Ergo is going to get. And so just my thanks is out to the Dog Nation readers and listeners to your program who all stepped up, went on there and gave money. 90% of them, you know, from the University of Georgia.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, Chip. Really good stuff, and it is always nice to see the way that Dog Nation has sort of stepped up on stuff like this, whether it, you know, be the Devin Gale situation from years ago, the Ergo family right now. We hate that these things exist in life, but it is a way for us to all sort of show that there are some things more important than football. Chip, we'll look forward to seeing your coverage of the Kirby Smart press conference later on today. Busy week there at a Dog Nation. I know you and Mike Griffith will be kind of all over all of it, and then in Columbia on Saturday. Should be a lot of fun. Thank you, sir, for your time.
Can't wait. See you, bud.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, really well said that by Chip Towers on that. Really cool stuff to see Georgia stepping up the way that it did coming up on Saturday for the Ergo family there. And I'm always really proud of that. You know, I get a chance to meet so many of you. And, you know, when I do meet you all, the one thing I see is that, you know, you do have perspective on life. You do have, you know, a belief that some things do transcend even football. And while we love football and use that as a break from everything that's happening in the real world, it is kind of nice to also be able to remember some of the things that are really, really crucial, and health and family and things of that nature obviously, you know, supersede everything on this mortal earth here. And it's nice to see Dog Nation really coming up in a big way for that. With all that in mind, let me talk for a moment about what's going to happen on Wednesday. I am really excited about this. I'm in fact going to unveil sort of a special announcement. Now, sometimes y'all get me crazy, you know, sort of give me grief because I'll sort of tease an announcement for a couple days. In this case, I'm just sort of going to unveil it because I'm really excited about it. We're going to be all Wednesday at the Marlows in Dunwoody at 6 p.m. for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview, getting ready for the Gamecocks on Saturday there with the folks from Terrapin Brewery, the big smoker out front at the Marlows in Dunwoody, just having a great party there from 6 to 8 p.m. I told you that there was a chance a special guest was going to be with us, and indeed that is going to be the case, as former Georgia Bulldog great Brandon Cablano is going to be my co-host there for the show there that evening, and a part of our off-air Q&A before the broadcast. So if you've got some thoughts or some questions about what it was really like to play for Kirby Smart and what it was like to be one of the players that laid the foundation in 2016 for what Georgia got done in 2017, I think you'll really enjoy that with Brandon Cablano coming up this Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Marlows in Dunwoody. That's going to be incredibly fun there for that. Okay, so looking forward to seeing Brandon and you at 6 p.m. Wednesday at the Marlows in Dunwoody. Let me transition here now, though, and talk a little bit about some of the storylines from the SEC on the weekend. Stayed up a little bit late last night to watch the LSU-Miami game, at least part of it, and then woke up this morning and watched more of it. And I was impressed by what I saw from LSU. Now, you heard me on Thursday during our Miami Bookie Best Bets. I said this was my number one sort of play of the weekend. I liked LSU a lot during this game because of what LSU can do defensively. And they made really things very tough on Malik Rozier, the Miami quarterback, yesterday. And at the risk of sort of saying something that's maybe, that's, you know, maybe impolite here, boy, I do not miss the sometimes lack of steadfast commitment to the offensive line that Mark Richt showed at Georgia. I think you saw that at Miami yesterday. Now, I revere Mark Richt as much as anybody can, but man, that is not a program right now, Miami, sort of led by an offensive line. They had some real problems against LSU, and I think that's a real issue there. Joe Burrow, the LSU offense, I don't know that's great as of yet, but defensively they can do some things really well. And it was very impressive to see that. It makes you think about October the 13th, I believe the date is, when Georgia goes in there. What I have not heard, maybe there is one, I haven't heard it. Is there an update on Clavon Chaisson, who left the game last night with an injury? I haven't seen anything on that. That's a big-time pass rusher who did leave that game. So that's an issue there to deal with. Let me also mention Alabama, who dominates Louisville week one. The big story coming out of this one, though, is the really unhinged rant that Nick Saban had with Maria Taylor on the broadcast when she asked a fairly innocuous question about what did you learn about your quarterbacks, and he used that as an opportunity to sort of go off on the media for trying to divide his team. Now, let me tell you a lot about this. First of all, this is sort of, you know, nothing from Nick Saban's ever authentic. You know, it's contrived examples of him trying to have fun. It's contrived examples of him trying to be outraged. This is simply an example of him just choosing the wrong contrivance. The phony outrage came out as opposed to the sort of the phony congeniality. In this case, ends up being a huge mistake. And I tweeted this yesterday. You know, for Nick Saban, who has teamed up with ESPN, they've been absolutely willing accomplices here, totally in the tank, for Saban to sort of humanize him in this reality TV series that ESPN's been televising here. He gets all the free PR for that and essentially gives it all back for nothing with kind of a misstep here against Maria Taylor. I think it's an ugly look for Saban. I think it's an example of why I think he's slipping here in terms of his ability to maintain its perch on top of the SEC. He's obviously the reigning national champion. But, folks, take a look at the recruiting rankings, and you can see, take a look at the guys that Alabama has accepted commitments from and the guys that Georgia has accepted commitments from, and you see the direction the wind's blowing here when it comes to Georgia and Alabama here for a moment. And, you know, frankly, I think that Saban just mishandled his quarterback situation a year ago for a guy that talks a lot about, competition. He had a competition and then didn't reward the results of that competition. He awarded the starting job in 2017 to Jalen Hurts when, you know, virtually anybody that could have gone through those practices, at least allegedly based on the rumor mill, knew that Tua Tagovailoa was better. But they picked Hurts, and now apparently maybe some Alabama players have decided they want to view him still as team leader here, and that's the issue that Saban's dealing with. I think ultimately that's why he sort of lost his cool with Maria Taylor on Saturday night. But it was a bad look for Saban, a guy who under the surface here has a couple of problems with his program right now, it would appear. But that's just my opinion. A couple other quick stories to get to for SEC through. I thought Auburn had a nice win on Saturday. Offensively, I think you'd like to have seen a little bit more from Jared Stidham. It's another example of, you know, one of the hallmarks of the Gus Malzahn era has been slow starts offensively at the beginnings of seasons. I would have liked to have seen Auburn do a little bit more offensively against Washington on Saturday. I knew the Auburn defense would be stout. I mean, you know, that's just a really tough front seven. You don't see that in the Pac-12. You don't see that west of the Mississippi really anywhere. I knew that would be an advantage for Auburn. I'd like to have seen more offensively, although maybe Jartavius Whitlow as a running back is the guy they're going to use a little bit more of. And then I guess overall, it's probably a bit of a flag-waving day for the SEC, Tennessee notwithstanding. Even Ole Miss, you know, had a comfortable win against Texas Tech. Middle Tennessee State was a bowl team a year ago. Vanderbilt blew the Blue Raiders out. Obviously, Alabama blowout. Miami gets blown out by LSU. Auburn beats Washington. So all in all, in terms of the high-profile non-conference games, a pretty good day for the SEC, I guess, all things considered, and we'll make that your SEC through. And I guess let me also squeeze this in real quick. I just think that Tennessee's bad, y'all. I do. I know they kept it closer against West Virginia than the final score might have indicated, but that's what Tennessee's supposed to do here. This was this is a Vols team. I think it's going to really, really struggle in SEC play here this season for sure. But obviously that's a problem for the folks in Knoxville here in Athens. Or in around Dog Nation, the state of Georgia. We're thinking about the Georgia Bulldogs here, who won 45-0 against Austin Peay on Saturday. And in a game like this, when you think about your R.S. Andrews cool under pressure, let me try that one more time. When you think about your R.S. Andrews cool under pressure performer of the week, it's sort of debatable about kind of who you go to and who you give it to here. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, I guess the ultimate takeaway for me from the game here is, while there's a lot of potential things that are more indicative of how the future is going to go for Georgia, there's also something kind of cool about just seeing that zero on the scoreboard. I mean, I went back and actually looked at this. You know, shutouts, Georgia had just one a year ago. It was just Tennessee. Could have almost had one against Florida, but the only actual shutout was there against the Tennessee Vols. Didn't have one at all in 2016. So shutouts are still kind of a cool thing here, even if you're playing an overmatched opponent like Austin Peay, and the Governors clearly were that overmatched opponent on Saturday. So I think for me, the R.S. Andrews cool under pressure performer of the week is going to be the Georgia defense for keeping that scoreboard on zero for the entire game. And for what it's worth, it sounds like Kirby Smart kind of agrees with that point.
I'll be honest with you. I'm not one to shed light on a lot of positives, but I didn't think we played to the caliber that we probably should have. But I thought defensively, when you have a shutout, in this day and age, it's hard to do, okay, especially against offenses that are in formations and rocketing and orbiting and doing things like that. It makes it, you know, tough to defend. But our kids played hard, and that's what we ask them to do.
I think in a game and an opponent against Austin Peay, you sort of have to set your own goals and objectives to strive for, because winning and losing on its own is just not all that crucial, which maybe you could say that's a reason why Georgia shouldn't even be playing games like this, and maybe they shouldn't be. However, they are playing them, and so therefore you have to sort of set your own standard in the game, and you know, keeping it on zero, sort of keeping that focus and motivation all the way to the end on that, I think is the kind of thing that you do sort of like to see there from Georgia. And I know it was such a big storyline when Georgia did play Florida a year ago, the fact that late score got added into the scorebook there by the Florida Gators. The Georgia starters, who were already on the bench by that point in time, had lost their mind. They were livid. They wanted that shutout against the Florida Gators. And while it's good to get young players in the field and get them playing, for the Georgia starters, they say, hey, we want to keep teams on zero, because obviously if you can keep them on zero, you're going to have a great chance of walking out of there with the win. So Georgia does do that yesterday. They get the shutout against Austin Peay, on Saturday. And for that, the Georgia defense will be our R.S. Andrews cool under pressure performer of the week. And my gosh, how great would it have been to have R.S. Andrews on Saturday, because while the Georgia defense may have been keeping cool under pressure, there was nobody in Athens keeping cool at all. But for the folks who are indoors, don't forget, you can keep cool no matter how hot it gets. And on Saturday, it got real hot. With the keep cool no matter what, guys, R.S. Andrews, clean screen, trained in Tommy Tech, specialize in giving old systems new life. They call, yes, I should say you call, they come, you're cool, period. It's as simple as that. But if your system's cooled its last, R.S. Andrews is going to have you covered there as well with replacement AC systems, custom designed to last with you, with available financing. So keep your cool. Call the Ones Dog Nation Trust, R.S. Andrews. You can find them online at rsandrews.com. All right, we will wrap up here today. First of all, I mentioned the Florida Gators a moment ago. Let me remind you that 54 days from now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We talk about it every single day here. We believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. 54 days from now, we think Georgia beats Florida again there in Jacksonville. It's our Gatorator countdown right here on Dog Nation Daily. Let me also remind you of this. Still some time left for you to go to DogNation.com and click on the Kroger Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to Baton Rouge. A lucky winner and a guest going to have a trip for two with us and the Dog Nation Invasion to Baton Rouge. And by the way, based on the performance of that LSU team last night, that trip to Baton Rouge is going to be a really interesting one. It's already one of the biggest parties of the year. It's going to be one of the biggest games there as well. We'd love for you to be a part of it. So go to DogNation.com and sign up for your chance to win. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Enjoy your Labor Day, everybody.